Welcome to the iBid Electric Facility Management Podcast. We are diving straight into a really critical challenge today, managing labor costs in electrical construction projects. For anyone overseeing major facility work, you know, renovations or new builds, this isn't just some line item. It's often, frankly, the biggest factor deciding if the whole thing works out financially, stays on schedule, or, well, if it turns into a mess.
Absolutely. And we need to set the stage right away with the scale of this risk. Because in electrical work, labor isn't minor, not at all. It can genuinely account for, say, 40 to 60% of the total project cost. It's massive.
40 to 60%.
Mm-hmm. Get labor right, you protect the budget, get it wrong, and potentially half your funding is at risk.
That really is the core challenge, isn't it? Because unlike, you know, big spool of cable or some custom switchgear things you can see and touch, with clear invoices, labor costs are just abstract. Their unit rates, assumptions about time, it makes them so hard for a manager to really audit or check. You're buying time, essentially.
Yeah, precisely. And that's why we often call labor inefficiency the silent budget killer. Think about it. If you have a complex job, maybe it should take 10,000 hours based on good standards. But if productivity slips, just say 20%. Or 30, suddenly you're paying for 12,000, maybe even 13,000 hours.
Wow.
And that difference, those thousands of extra hours, that can easily mean hundreds of thousands of dollars gone. And often the manager is left scrambling for an explanation. Where did that time even go?
So let's dig into that. Where does the time go? Let's get specific about why these labor hours spiral out of control.
Okay, well, the first big issue often starts way before anyone picks up a tool. It's what we call unrealistic estimates. Sometimes, frankly, it's bad faith estimating. Contractors, you know, they're under pressure to win the job. So they might deliberately lowball the initial labor hours in their bid.
Just to get the contract signed.
Exactly. The plan is often to recover those costs later, maybe through change orders that seem necessary or by pointing to delays that push things into costly overtime.
That sounds predatory. But how does a facility manager tell the difference? I mean, isn't a low bid just good competition?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? A truly sharp, efficient bid usually comes with detailed unit rates. They're often willing to be transparent about how they reach those numbers. A predatory bid, though, it tends to use vague lump sums, or it relies on really inflated base hours hidden somewhere. If one bid is drastically lower than all the others, you have to ask why. Where are they planning to make up that difference?
Okay, that makes sense. So assume the estimate was maybe shaky. Then the work starts. What happens on the job site itself? Let's talk about job site inefficiencies. We hear about poor coordination, but is it mostly those small, annoying delays, like, you know, an electrician waiting for a cheap part, or is it the big stuff, like the whole HVAC system not being ready?
It's definitely both. Those small things, waiting for materials, walking across a huge site for tools, they add up incredibly fast. 10 minutes here, 15 there, across a whole crew. Brutal. But yeah. The really catastrophic losses often come from poor coordination between major trades. If the concrete at pour is delayed a week and your entire electrical crew is just waiting,
ouch.
That's money just flying out the window, and you're often still paying for supervision, maybe standby time.
And when that waiting makes the schedule slip, the go-to solution is almost always overtime creep. That's where the budget really starts to hemorrhage, right?
Exactly. Pushing crews into premium time, time and a half, maybe double time seems like the quickest fix. But it drains the labor budget so much faster than standard hours. Plus, let's be honest, people aren't as productive on overtime. They get tired.
Yeah, quality can suffer.
Right. Which might mean rework later, often paid at that same premium rate. It becomes this really vicious cycle.
And then there are learning curve issues. This must be huge in specialized facilities, right? Like data centers or hospitals.
Oh, absolutely. If you're installing, say, really sensitive power infrastructure for a financial data center or complex life safety systems in a hospital wing, that takes very specific skills. If the crew assigned isn't really up to speed on that niche work, they're essentially learning on your dime. Productivity just tanks immediately while they figure it out.
Okay, that's another hidden cost.
And one more thing we often forget, environmental factors. Stuff you can't control but still pay for. Think about bad weather shutting down outside work, or really difficult site access. Maybe it's a historic building and materials have to be hand-carried up six flights.
Or even just tight security.
Yeah, strict building security protocols. If crews spend an hour every morning just getting badged in, that's lock time, time the facility manager pays for even though no actual work got done.
Okay, that paints a pretty clear picture of where the time gets wasted on site. But I'm still trying to wrap my head around how a contractor justifies billing all those hours, wasted or not. Which brings us to the really sneaky part. The hidden nature of these costs.
Right, because we haven't touched on the core issue yet. The buffer, the padding that's often built in. See, because labor's abstract, like we said. When a contractor tells you, oh, running that circuit will take 20 hours, most facility managers, well, they just have to accept it.
They don't have a benchmark.
Exactly. They're relying solely on the contractor's word because they often lack easy access to, you know, authoritative industry standards to check against.
And this is where the padding comes in.
This is where it gets really interesting. Contractors often build a significant buffer padding into their labor units. It's like an insurance policy for them. This buffer artificially inflates the hours needed, basically guaranteeing they hit their profit margin, even if there are minor inefficiencies or scheduling hiccups.
How do they hide that, though?
Well, it's often disguised. For instance, a task might involve some simple, repetitive work, like running conduit in a straight line, but also some really complex work, like tricky panel terminations. They might bundle it. So an installation that, by objective industry standards, should maybe take 40 hours, the contractor might price it at 60 hours by inflating the average time per unit. That extra 20 hours is hidden within the complexity of the overall task.
And you multiply that hidden 20 hours across dozens, maybe hundreds of tasks on a big project.
And suddenly you're paying for weeks, maybe even months of labor that wasn't actually needed. It's just padding.
Wow. Do you have an example of this playing out?
We do, actually. A really clear one involving a major hospital expansion. The electrical part was initially did at 18,000 labor hours. Seemed plausible given the scope.
Okay, 18,000 hours? How did they check that number?
The management team brought in an independent review. They took that bid and compared it meticulously against industry standard labor units, the NECA standards, adjusted for the specific site conditions, you know, access issues, security, things like that. The analysis found the project should have only required about 15,000 hours.
15,000, so 3,000 hours difference.
3,000 extra hours baked into the bid, that represented nearly $300,000 in potential overpayment.
$300,000, just padding. How did the facility team react? Was it tough to renegotiate?
Well, first there was shock, definitely. Then determination. The contractor naturally pushed back at first, but the facility team had the data, verifiable, objective data backing their position, that gave them undeniable leverage.
So they were able to renegotiate?
They were, successfully. And the best part, they reinvested those savings at $300,000 directly into additional safety systems for that hospital wing, systems they wouldn't have afforded otherwise.
That's incredible. That really shows the power of moving from just accepting numbers to actually verifying them with data. Okay, so this is huge for our listeners. What can facility managers actually do to get control back? To keep these labor hours in check, let's outline some concrete steps.
All right, five key steps. Step one is absolutely fundamental. Demand detailed labor breakdowns. Don't accept a vague lump sum bid. Don't accept just a total number of hours. Insist that contractors break down their estimates by system.
Like how much time for feeders, how much for lighting, fire alarms, branch wiring, that sort of thing.
Exactly. Force them to show their work, how they arrived at the total. It makes padding much harder to hide.
Okay, step one, demand detail. Step two.
Step two builds on that. Compare against industry standards. You need objective data to push back with. Use established benchmarks. The most recognized are the NECA guides, the National Electrical Contractors Association's Manual of Labor Units.
NECA, right. That's the industry standard for estimating time.
It is. It's data-driven, widely accepted. It provides that crucial, objective, third-party benchmark. Now, these standards are complex. If you, the listener, don't have direct access or the expertise to interpret them effectively, you absolutely need to partner with someone who does. An independent estimator, perhaps.
Makes sense. Okay, step three. This one seems critical for controlling those sudden cost spikes.
It is. Monitor overtime closely. Since overtime costs so much more time and a half, double time, you have to manage it proactively. Require the contractor to give you advance notice and a clear justification before putting crews on overtime.
And challenge it if it seems like they're just covering up earlier mistakes.
Precisely. Challenge the necessity. Is it a genuine emergency or is it masking poor planning or inefficiency from earlier in the project? Don't just approve it automatically.
Got it. Step four is about seeing what's actually happening.
Right. Check job site productivity. You need eyes on the ground. Conduct regular, focused site walks. And don't just look for safety issues. Look specifically for signs of inefficiency. Are crews standing around waiting for materials? Are technicians constantly walking long distances for tools or equipment?
Those visual cues are red flags for wasted money.
Immediate indicators that you're paying for lost time, lost dollars.
Okay, and the final step, number five.
Step five really ties it all together. Use independent review. Having an unbiased, expert third party verify those initial labor assumptions and monitor progress is invaluable. It gives you the leverage you need for fair negotiations up front, it helps you challenge inflated change orders later, and it keeps the contractor accountable throughout the project. It's about having data on your side.
Those five steps seem very actionable. Demand detail, compare to standards, monitor overtime, check productivity, and get independent review.
Exactly. And it's important to remember the impact goes beyond just the budget numbers. Poor productivity has ripple effects. When labor is inefficient, the whole project timeline gets dragged out, and that affects everything.
Absolutely. Delays impact operations, right? Pushing back the opening date for a new facility wing, disrupting ongoing services.
Potentially hitting revenue generation. And think about critical facilities, hospitals, data centers, advanced manufacturing. Project downtime caused by these delays has incredibly serious operational consequences, often far more costly than the original labor variance itself.
So this is where getting expert support really protects the facility manager's position.
Yeah, precisely. It's about having someone who can provide, for example, labor unit verification, meticulously comparing the contractor's assumptions against those detailed industry benchmarks we talked about.
And doing job site reality checks, too. Evaluating the actual logistics on site, not just on paper, to see if those extra hours the contractor might be claiming are truly justified by the conditions.
Yes. And crucially, providing overtime analysis, calculating the real financial impact of going into premium time before it spirals out of control.
Which then feeds into negotiation support, giving the manager the hard data needed to push back effectively on inflated bids or questionable change orders.
It all points towards proactive planning. Identifying these labor risks early before they snowball into those budget-breaking, project-delaying nightmares.
It sounds like moving from a reactive position to a proactive, data-driven one.
That's the goal. The final takeaway here, really, for everyone listening is this. Labor is likely your biggest single cost driver in electrical construction. And inefficiency is the silent killer of your budget. But by demanding transparency from contractors and consistently using objective, verifiable industry benchmarks to check their claims, you absolutely can stop paying for their inefficiency. You can ensure your projects run smoother, finish faster, and most importantly, stay firmly on budget.
Just think about that for a moment. What could you do by recovering even just 10 or 15% of your electrical labor costs? Imagine having those funds potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars that might otherwise just be padding available for crucial upgrades or new equipment or enhanced safety systems. It changes the game. If you need help on a commercial or industrial electrical construction project, schedule a call with an iBid Electric Cost Estimator today.